whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We normally do the Pettycast on Tuesday, but as we were kind of going through things yesterday, I'm like, well, this is petty, and this is petty, and there's really no place to park this stuff to where you build a topic off of it, but this would be really fun to hit these things rapid-fire style.
Look, when Pettycast is done right, it's not something that gets old with time.
Yeah, it's something you can...
We could do it every day.
We could. There's a lot of petty out there in this world. Not sure if you've noticed.
We're pretty petty to begin with.
Yes.
I mean, the whole show is pretty much Pettycast.
But, indeed.
No, we just amp it up during this.
That's right. So let's get a little petty on a Thursday, shall we? All right. And this might be me being petty. This was, here was J.J. Watt on the Pat McAfee show doing his weekly hit yesterday. And I think this is right out of the chute. J.J. takes a swing at Pat McAfee's Indianapolis Colts.
There's an organization out there that people thought might not make a move after this season. They decided not to make a move after this season, but they have in the past made a move mid-season where they brought in a former player with no head coaching experience. And I'm curious if that's something you would ever consider if a certain season didn't go a certain way and you got a phone call and they said, hey, we need an intern that could possibly turn into a full-time. Would you possibly be interested in, say, an old team of yours calling to do a job if they're not doing well, which they haven't done well in quite a while?
They did fire their coach. They hired Rich Rodriguez. Are you're talking about West Virginia? That's who you're talking about?
I'm talking about the one in the AFC South that hasn't won it in, like, forever.
Oh, you're talking about the Colts. You're talking about the Indianapolis Colts.
Okay, so that was J.J. taking a shot at the Colts. And that show, you know, the two of them, that's kind of become a thing since J.J. started going on that show.
Yeah.
You know, J.J.'s all about the Texans, which we love. And Pat McAfee is a Colts legend who's got a complicated relationship with the team right now, but I think still loves the Colts overall. Here's where I'm at with this. And I will admit, this petty may be me. I don't know, man. Like, this Colts-Texans thing going on, this is a national show that McAfee is on here. I feel like this would be the equivalent of just me, somebody handing me a podcast about the Sun Belt Conference and saying, hey, you want to take a listen to this here? Like, is the nation up for this Texans versus Colts thing that J.J. and McAfee have been stretching out all year
long? It would be more about the, you know, J.J. and Pat McAfee are both celebrities in the sports world in their own right.
Yeah.
So it's more about them going at each other than I think. But I guess as a Texans fan, I'm kind of like, man, like arguing about who's at the tippy top of the AFC South Mountain.
I'm a little embarrassed by it.
I'm
a little embarrassed by it.
So I go like, who's the better B student? I don't know. There's a, it's a, yeah, it almost like it's,
someone's a generous grader for the AFC South.
Yeah. So I guess I might actually be less into it than teams that don't have a fighting interest in it. There's another part too, where that now that McAfee has publicly divorced the Colts, it almost feels like you're trying to jab a wound that's already been acknowledged.
Yeah.
You know, like you're trying to, you know, like when you admit a mistake and somebody is like,
keeps bringing it up.
Yeah, but what about that time? Yeah. Like, yeah, I know, I just talked about it.
Oh, okay.
I just talked about that mistake that I made.
Okay, well, that makes me want JJ to do it a little more then. Okay, that's
like
an interesting point.
Bill O'Brien and Tom Brady getting into it on the sideline.
Yeah.
That was a scenario in which Tom Brady had said, I messed up, I know. And Bill O'Brien was like, yeah, but you messed
but
up.
You messed up.
And Tom Brady's like, I know.
Yeah.
Okay, and it
read
did get, it, and it, that got his goat.
Yeah.
That got Tom Brady's goat. Okay.
I feel like part of it is I feel like J.J. Watt's above debating the Texans and the Colts in the AFC South.
This
is
the thing it's probably unfair because I don't watch that show a lot. I kind of see clips of it more.
Same.
I've always felt like when McAfee is going over the top on the Colts and everything, it feels a little bit, it doesn't feel the same as like a dyed-in-the-wool, like true blue fan of the organization or whatever. That I don't know. I don't want to say it feels contrived, but it just doesn't, and that might just be on my take on it because I hate the Colts. So that's the other part of it that kind of rings hollow for
me. Yeah, I just want them to kind of stop doing it. That's all. All right, this one.
I guess more of that, I guess it's like, how could anybody love the Colts? Like, how could, how could you love the Colts?
It's weird. It's
everything
weird.
They stand for.
Yeah, yeah.
The historical atrocities and whatnot.
And yet they pack the stadium every week. It's weird.
Like cheering for Mussolini or something.
Same exact thing.
Yeah, that's what they are. A bunch of those Italians that you hate.
That's cheering Italians. For the Colts. What are you talking
about? You despise them.
That's not true.
That's
at
about
all.
The height of the racial diversity in Indianapolis. That's it's not- like, hey, we allow Italians in.
I wish I were Italian. Nobody eats more Italian food and watches more Sopranos than I do.
Seriously, it is like there's times when I was playing in Indianapolis where you're looking up at the stands and you're like, because Houston's so diverse. There's times I'd look up at the stands, I'd be like, gosh, I feel like I'm in a baseball game in the 1930s.
Yeah.
Like, this is different. Yeah.
Like I'm in a clone factory here. On field jersey swaps, not a big fan of them myself. Definitely not a big fan of what we saw here in this exchange. Between Roger Rosengarten and Myles Garrett on the Hard Knocks AFC North. The Ravens playing the Browns this past Saturday.
Rosengarten's an offensive tackle, a rookie offensive tackle.
Yeah.
Out there playing versus the Browns. Yep. And he wanted to profess his admiration to Myles Garrett, who's actually playing against.
Who's probably destroying him in that game. here's what it sounded like. Take a listen.
I know I'm a nobody, but I get that jersey up there. Hey. Y'all winning games, y'all looking great. Yeah, never nobody. I got you.
Got me?
Yeah.
All right, so if you couldn't hear, it was a little muffled. Rosengarten says to Myles Garrett, hey, I know I'm a nobody, but can I get that jersey after the game? And Myles Garrett puts his arm around him in the midst of getting blown out by the Ravens and says, you're never a nobody. You're winning games, you're looking good. I got you. And he says, Rosengarten says, thanks, buddy. You love this.
I sent a screen cap of this to actually Tony Baselli. Baselli and I had a conversation this year. And Baselli's like super religious and everything. Good dude. But he.
Except for this.
Well, no, like he feels like there's a place for football hatred in your life. Like you should hate your opponent. Football hate your opponent.
Yeah.
And this guy, now Rosengarten's played well and he's on a really good team. Like he's part of a really good team, played a bunch as a rookie. That's the thing that's the saving grace is that he plays for the Ravens. But, like, that's a dude you're playing against. Like, why are you sitting there, like, bowing down to him and asking for his jersey? I don't like the jersey swap in general with the opponent.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah.
Unless it's somebody you actually know or something. And, like, the jersey swap where it started, you know, with soccer and rugby and those sports, it's almost like it's supposed to be an extreme show of respect, like if you battled somebody, or you're almost like the greater player is acknowledging the younger player, where now it's just become a way to get trinkets for your rec room.
It's a flea market, man.
Can you at least pretend you hate the opponent?
Right.
It's disgusting.
I was a little surprised. I saw this clip and the caption in the tweet, you know, because there's a jillion people that share these things, said it was one of these things like, Roger Rosengarten asked for Myles Garrett jersey, and you're not going to believe the reply. I'm like, oh, I hope he told him to go die.
Yeah.
I hope he told him, which is what I thought, like Myles Garrett, like a dog would do that. Like, can you imagine walking up to James Harrison and asking for his jersey in the middle of a game?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I feel like he would figure out a way to take that as a reason to seek you out and injure you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to blast this kid. What's that? He would look at it as disrespect
and
somehow.
I feel like 20, 25 years ago, that would have been the norm. Would have been like, what are you talking? Get away from me. Especially like an AFC North rivalry. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that division is the most collegiate of the division.
You
want
to talk about old school manufacturing hate? I believe it was Greg Lloyd. I know it was Keenan McCardle was my teammate who was going through this. Keenan McCardle was out on the field playing the Steelers, and Greg Lloyd, I'm pretty sure it was Greg Lloyd because this is the kind of thing he would pull, came up to him and was like, you're calling my house? You're calling my house in the middle of the night talking to my wife? And Keenan's like, what the hell are you talking about?
He's just making stuff up.
Up in his head. Lloyd would do that. He would kind of like manufacture reasons to hate guys,
the
you know?
Stuff you guys
so
see.
He would
on
create
the field.
This scenario. I didn't see it firsthand. Keenan was telling us about it afterwards. And Keenan's like, what? What on earth are you talking about? Yeah. The one time I had a moment like that, my rookie year, we were playing Washington. And Bruce Smith was there. Bruce Smith was a child.
Oh, later in his career, yeah.
So I sought him out after the game just to kind of pay my respects. And I remember thinking afterwards, I was like, I think the way that Bruce Smith took it was I think it made him feel really old.
Yeah.
He almost was like, he appreciated me saying, like, oh, I loved you growing up and everything. But I'm this, like, I'm this peach fuzz-faced rookie that, like, is super young, like, talking about how awesome he was back in the day.
Oh, you should have done it before the game.
I went up to him and I said, hey, Bruce, don't worry about your lack of production, okay? You're still a swell. You're still a hero historically, okay? Hey, don't worry about how your career has declined.
In retrospect, you should have done it before the game because it might have messed with him a little bit.
Might have set him off.
That's true.
That's a sleeping giant
right there. That's true.
Remember, we talked about that with David Anderson and Drew Hodgson before the game a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
A defensive lineman, let your inner psycho out. Offensive lineman, there is a little bit of an element. I might have to respect this kid if his strategy was, I'm going to take a little fire out of this guy's step, Myles Garrett, by really greasing him up, buttering him up. Because offensive linemen are usually pretty smart about, like, there's certain guys you just don't poke the bear. You don't poke the bear. This guy might just kind of cruise along. As long as you don't poke the bear, so I'm just going to be the opposite of poking the bear. I'm going to butter him up.
All right, let's get to this one since we mentioned it coming into this segment. This is we don't do a lot of college basketball on this show, but when Mick Cronin, UCLA men's basketball coach, very successful coach, as you're about to hear him remind you, was a coach at Cincinnati for many, many years, got the UCLA job, done a good job at UCLA, but we're living in a new world now with NIL. And in basketball, it's very acute. Because that's been a sport for a long time. I feel like the agents and hangers-on have been a thing in basketball for maybe long, with AAU and everything else. And it's just a more individualized sport that it's probably harder to manage. It sounds weird to say because it's a smaller roster, but I feel like that element might be very difficult to manage, especially if you're old school like Mick Cronin. So maybe some of that is bleeding into the evaluation of his team, but they lost to Michigan the other night in a Big Ten matchup. By 19 points, and he was none too happy with his squad after the game.
But we don't play. We're soft. So don't tell me you want to win. Just don't tell me you want to win. So don't tell me you want to win. It's crazy, you know. And it's every day. I'm tired of it. It's every day. I have the most energy of all of anybody at practice every day. I'm upset with everybody in that locker room, my assistant coaches and my players. I mean, I don't need to do anything else. I almost got 500 wins. I'm only 53. I mean, it's a joke. It's a joke. But yet I come in and I have more passion and energy and pride than everybody in. That's the problem. So what the truth of it has been, it's really hard to coach people that are delusional. The hungry dog gets the bone. We got guys that think they're way better than they are. They're nice kids. They're completely delusional about who they are.
Okay. Rally the troops.
You know what?
What was
it? It would have been an awesome speech if he hadn't brought up his own resume. All of it was probably true. He does probably have a bunch of delusional guys that think they should be multimillionaires already and everything. I believe all of that. I don't know why he felt the need to point out his own resume. And also the whole kind of like, look at me, I'm the cock of the walk, that part of it. That's where it turned it. It felt a little bit like Aaron Rodgers, where he's like, we're in criticizing the guys on the team who are talking to the media. He's doing it while talking to the media. Like the ultimate hypocrisy moment is like, dude, you're not being very old school if you're sitting up there trumping up your own resume as you're criticizing these guys for not being old school enough.
He hit for the cycle in that thing, man. If you're counting, and then by the way, that was a kind of one of those like internet cut-ups of things he said throughout the press conference.
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as it. Yeah.
Those things weren't all condensed.
Yeah.
He didn't cut a promo on them like that.
Yeah.
Those are all things he said throughout the press conference that were sort of chopped up and mashed up together. But he called them soft.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one.
I'm cool with that.
Don't tell me you want to win.
Yeah.
Said that three times.
I like that.
I have the most energy of anybody out there.
Yeah, that's what I'm like. All right, okay, dude. You're really distancing yourself from the situation here, aren't you?
I felt like if he just said, I have the most energy of anybody out there at practice, and it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah.
But it almost felt like very braggy. I'm upset with everybody. So the coaches are in the, like,
yeah,
he's,
the assistant coaches,
he's
everybody.
On a pedestal
everybody
above
except
everybody.
Me.
Everybody except me. Yes.
Very Jamie Tartt like is what it was like. It felt very, very much Tartt. Like, yeah.
Yes. I don't, this is the best one. I don't need to do anything else. I've got 500 wins, and I'm 53 years old.
Yeah, that's where it went south.
Like, I don't even need to work. Like, I've got, you know how much money I've got in the bank right now? I don't even need to work, man. That's what I heard.
Yeah, the whenever you conspicuously
delusional
point yourself to the point to yourself as the emblem of all of it is good and holy, you got to be kind of careful about that. I don't think Jesus was like, I don't think there are a lot of whole quotes out there where Jesus is like, hey, look at me.
Right.
Look at me.
Right.
I don't have to be out here doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the Son of God. And also God himself. I still don't understand how it works, but I don't have to do any of this. I got you guys out here blaspheming, adulterating, all this stuff.
That was
what the hell? I mean, let the others say it for you. If you're that great, that was the one thing Joseph did in that whole story. Mm-hmm. Was Joseph sat Jesus down when he was like 12 years old? He's like, listen, Jesus. You know, let the others say it for you. You know, you're gonna have a band of merry band of apostles here.
Disciples,
at some point. They can do all of this.
Yeah. Mick Cronin Christ figure is what I heard just what you
basically
said.
Basically said that. That was the part they cut out. He said, like, I am the Lord.
That actually, your Jesus talk, was what they cut out of the Bible. That was a deleted scene. That's actually what was said at the dinner that night.
Like, yeah, back when
Listen, man.
Yeah.
Y'all are delusional and soft, okay?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Look at me.
Yeah, look at me.
What would Jesus do? Right. Elevate himself above others. Look, I'm up here on the... Why am I the one on the cross? Hey, you losers. You bummed. That was the speech that he gave. They couldn't hear it. It was just right out of earshot. Why me?
Yeah.
You're the bums who, yeah, let exactly. others let others say it for you.
Mick Cronin. Yeah. I'm up here. I got 500 wins. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you.
That was a Jack Easter. I stole that from Jack Easterby. That was one of his speeches. He competed on the cross.
Mm-hmm.
That is an actual quote.
Payne and Pen. Yeah, find it. It's on YouTube somewhere, I'm sure. Payne and Pendergast with you. You want to hear dysfunctional in the division? We talked about the AFC South a little bit earlier. This will make you feel really good about where the Texans are in the division when you hear this coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
What are you doing over there?
I was curious if anybody else had come up with the nickname Lad McConkey.
The H instead of the big C there?
Yeah, and I'm like, definitely, 100%. You brought that up during the break. We were trying to come up with the equivalent of, like, what's the equivalent of the white college point guard?
In the NFL.
The scrappy white Duke point guard in the NFL. The Duke point guard especially, where you're like, man, even the people you would think would love this guy because he's white hate him because he's white.
It's the Patriots white slot receiver.
Slot receiver. Yeah. Edelman or Wes Welker.
Amendola.
Yeah, like because it was the Patriots, you're like,
they're good. Yeah.
And you were like, because Lad McConkey, people seem to like him.
Yeah.
And he's still primarily a slot receiver.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was like, definitely. Oh, yeah, I can buy a Lad McConkey T-shirt.
Yeah. Where they spell it M-C-H-O-N-K-Y.
Yes, it says, celebrate white lightning, Lad McConkey.
White lightning. Cracker McSlotty. Oh, that's
funny.
Well,
yeah, the whole Reed Shepherd,
did you see he had 49 points in the G League the other night, Reed Shepherd?
Yeah, I heard he didn't complain about it either.
No.
That's what you get out of a guy like Reed Shepherd.
Reed Shepherd, I tell you. He didn't storm off the floor like that Cameron Whitmore.
None of this flashy jazz.
His shenanigans.
Doesn't listen to jazz music either. That's for the devil it is.
17 points in 18 minutes, and you storm off the floor and don't high-five anybody.
Not since Bob Cousy is a man, young talent come along like this.
Show the
world how proper basketball is played.
Reed Shepherd's down on the border toiling down there, I tell you. 49 points. 17.
Look at that rebounding.
17-33 he was.
Yeah, so if you want your Lad McConkey t-shirt, you can go to dogzillasports.com.
A minute for dogzilla.com. All right. Jacksonville is still a laughing stock. We're going to circle back in the next segment to some of the things Nick Caserio had to say.
I'll still give you credit for coming up with that nickname, even though in this day and age of social media, it's hard to come up with anything original. So I still give credit if you come up with it without actually having heard it. It's like, you came up with it. A bunch of other people did too, but you came up with
it. Yeah, I just said, well, he's got Honky in his last name. All right. We'll get to Nick Caserio in the next segment. Jacksonville's still very up in the air. I'm keeping an eye on these other AFC South teams because all of them seem to be in a mode of either, like, just running it back with a bat. They're all in a mode of self-mutilation, it feels like, right now, which is beautiful for the Houston Texans. Pete Prisco, who is based out of Jacksonville, you know Pete very well from your time as a Jaguar back in the day, writes for CBSSports.com now. He was on a Jacksonville, well, it looked like a Jacksonville podcast, a Jags podcast, and I forget the name of it, I apologize. But Trent Baalke, the GM, Trent Baalke, the GM, is still there in Jacksonville.
And Pete hates Trent Baalke.
A lot of people do.
Yeah.
And in this cut, he's saying the Trent Baalke thing may not be for long. And then listen to him beg for Ben Johnson to come to Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm. What I was told was the coach will now have the major juice in the building. And they said they've said that in the past, but now I think it's to the point where that coach comes in, it's his power. And it should be. And in that scenario, if it's his power, then he should be able to make the decision on who he wants as the general manager. And I think that's why guys that they say, oh, I might not interview for that job, go interview for it.
Yeah.
And exhibit A is Ben Johnson. Mm-hmm. Ben Johnson supposedly wants that job. That was the one he was eyeing all along. You know, he's from North Carolina. He's, you know, it's a small town. They have a small town feel to it. Jacksonville has that same feel. Jacksonville has no state. There's no state income tax. They have an owner that doesn't meddle. He kept that guy there for how long? Trent Baalke's been there for how long?
Yeah.
So you have a quarterback who you can make Jared Goff, same type of guy. You can do that with him. And so I think Ben Johnson's drawn to that. Well, go interview.
I don't know if you can make Trevor Lawrence Jared Goff. I don't.
You can't make him what?
Jared Goff.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh. I thought you said something else.
Oh,
ben
no.
Ben thought you did.
No. I didn't say that.
He is very religious, yes.
Jared Goff. Yeah,
there will be no seed spilled.
Did you?
Yes.
You didn't dump that, did you, Ben? Okay. I said Jared Goff.
I knew who you were talking about. I honestly thought that's what you said.
I talk a little fast sometimes.
Okay, so I don't know. I think there's an avenue by which you could make... I mean, Ben Johnson made Jared Goff Jared Goff.
No,
I Jared Goff had been just like thrown out like a used tissue out of L.A.
No,
and
you're right.
Now look at him.
Yeah.
Except when he's playing in NRG Stadium.
I just think there's an element to Jared Goff's game that accuracy is a lot of it. You know,
yeah.
It's more pinpoint. Trevor Lawrence, I mean, for a guy who was the number one overall pick, he's scattershot.
Well, I don't... The big thing with Trevor Lawrence is it's like if he knows where he's going with the ball at the beginning of the play, he's got beautiful accuracy.
And maybe Ben
like,
Johnson makes
touch
it easier.
And everything
him.
Else yeah. like that. Yeah. So I that's the one move that I would... I'd be way more fearful of that, if that's the right term, or it would raise my eyebrows more than, say, even hiring Urban Meyer. Because Urban Meyer was a big wild card. It was either going to be awesome or it was going to be disaster. It was option B.
Yeah.
With Ben Johnson, all right, I have no idea how he'll be as a head coach.
Right.
But if you're trying to get the most out of Trevor Lawrence, this is probably your best way to get a bona fide offensive coordinator in there who's been part of a difficult turnaround. That's why I'm stumping for Aaron Glenn, too. Like, Aaron Glenn, defensive coordinator for the Lions, when he got to Detroit... That was one of the worst defenses in the league.
Yes.
And he had to oversee and be a part of a four-year real turnaround. And the offense turned around before the defense. And now he's dealing with all these injuries and that they're still playing the way they are. Likewise with Ben Johnson, he's been part of a difficult turnaround. When he got the play calling duties, it was as they fired the offensive coordinator in the middle of a season.
Yeah.
So that's as a Texans fan, that's the one that I most that I don't want to see. I'd like to see the Ben Johnson experiment play out elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like the Jaguars are going to get worse if Ben Johnson doesn't work out, but there's an upside there where they could get way, way better.
Well, they've got no choice. The Jags do at this point. They've got to get a solution that gets the most out of Trevor Lawrence based on what he costs now.
Yeah,
you know, like this is not like they fired Urban. It's not the same mentality. Like when they hired Doug Peterson, and at the time that made sense because. You drafted the guy young, and he's still on his rookie deal. Now it's like a five-alarm fire. You got to because Trevor Lawrence ain't going anywhere for the next few years.
Yeah,
you know at least when he was on his rookie deal, if he wasn't working out under Doug Peterson his second year, and he worked out great the second year, they won the division. But if he wasn't working out, well, then you punt on Trevor Lawrence. But now you can't punt on Trevor Lawrence, not without taking like a Russell Wilson-sized cap hit.
Yeah.
You know,
the Shad Khan, the owner, is an interesting one too because he's a guy I really want to like. Because he does, like Pete was saying there, he does do a lot of the things the right way and the way you want your owner to operate. Let the football people make. Now, he lets the football people make the football decisions, and yet he's also inserted his professional wrestling
AEW,
maven
yeah.
son into a guy that has a voice on draft today.
Yeah.
Now, he's in charge of the undrafted free agents, but still, I'm guessing there's a lot of... Okay, what happens when you're interviewing for that job? That's a big elephant in the room, man. Are you like, okay, thank you, Mr. Khan, for the opportunity. I got to tell you, honestly, I need to evaluate everybody, and that includes your son.
Well,
and there's a chance that I might choose not to use him in his current role.
There's always a chance that, well, if anything happens to Shot Khan, not to be too morbid, you're working for Tony Khan.
Oh, there's no morbidity about it. Yeah. I mean, he's old.
He's an old man. Yeah,
I don't care how rich he is. He's old.
You know who's got takes?
And he parties hard.
He does. Yeah. And he's got a handlebar mustache, which is amazing. You know who's got takes on the Khan family? Mad Dog Russo. Not a big fan of the Khan family in Jacksonville.
Let's call this like we see it. How about this Jacksonville owner, Khan? He doesn't get a lot of grief. He is by far horrendous. He's owned the team since 2011. Mm. They have had 1 year where they won 10 games. Yeah. Did you know that? The man has been there for 13 years. He's had 1 year where he's won 10 games. They are non-competitive. Furthermore, he brought Urban Meyer in. He plays two games in London because he wants to become the United Kingdom's team. Trust me, my mother's English. Nobody in the world, nobody cares in London about the stupid Jacksonville Giants. Oh, they're there for 2 weeks. They lose a home game. That's a mess. And then he goes out there and he fires Peterson and keeps the GM there this week.
Yeah.
And then his statement says, well, I understand we're going to lose some head coaching candidates because I kept the GM. Well, hold on now. And he's got his kid. Who's the head of the statistical data? How can you say anything about Jacksonville when you got the kids sitting in the freaking front office? What's he ever done in football? Let's call it like we see it. We kill the owners all the time. Woody's awful. Haslam, we just named a few. Jerry, how many times have we killed Jerry here? Yeah. Let's call it like we see it. There is nobody worse than Khan. Go look at his record. Go look at his record as the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. It is behind. It's pathetic. So we kill Lawrence. We kill Peterson. We kill Doug Marone. We kill this. How about killing a guy who went to start the paychecks? This is not freaking an automotive store where he made his fortune. This is an NFL team.
Was an automotive story. Like, yeah, he designed a bumper that ended up being used on 70% of American-made cars.
Yeah.
But whatever. Now, this is the thing with Shot Khan. All those nice things I said about him, including the fact that one of the reasons the Jaguars are able to stay in Jacksonville, one of the smallest markets that doesn't have any of the same Green Bay qualities to it, is because, like, he's had to figure out ways to kind of get revenue from elsewhere and everything. And I actually think his strategy towards London is, I think it's smart. But if I were to have a conversation with 74-year-old Shad Khan, it would be the same conversation I might have with a teenager about the people with whom you're associating and some of the bad influences in your life. One being Trent Baalke.
Yes.
And the other possibly being your own son.
Yes.
Which is which is a tough conversation to have, but he very much feels like one of these owners who's still, at the time, at least a decade ago, you could say he's new to the sport. He's got to learn some of these lessons. When Shad Khan came out at the beginning of the season and said this was the most talented Jaguars team that they've ever had, people in Jacksonville were like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, they went to two AFC championship games in 3 years. They went 14-2 in 1999. And Jags fans are like, do you even know the history of your own
team? Of your own team that you bought.
Of your own team. And then it couldn't have blown up in his face even worse. So somebody in the Jaguars organization told me, or somebody that is very close to the Jaguars organization, said their suspicion is that, that came directly from Trent Baalke. Like, that feels exactly like, okay.
Pulling the strings on him.
Shad Khan is a billionaire puppet on Trent Baalke's string.
God.
So, at some point you got to... Yeah, cut the apron strings, man. It's time to live on your own, Shad Khan. You got a mega yacht, okay? You know, you don't need this hanger on Trent Baalke telling you what to do.
That's fascinating, man. Like Trent, I feel like Trent Baalke should write a book. You know, like how do you hang on this long in these organizations?
Trent Baalke is to Shad Khan what Jerry Jones is to Jerry Jones.
Yes.
He's an owner that's got a GM that's got way too much influence over him.
Yep, the voice is in his head. Nick Caserio is on with us yesterday. Simple question, is C.J. Stroud a better quarterback now than he was this time a year ago? We'll talk about the offensive line We did talk about the offensive line with Nick yesterday. You'll hear it if you missed it coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Texans Chargers, a reminder, 3:30 kickoff on Saturday. If you're going to the game, stop by, say hello. We'll be doing Texans Countdown just outside the stadium, southeast corner of the stadium.
Yeah.
Big stage, can't miss us.
I will be gregarious AF because... You were at the Christmas game. Sometimes people want to talk to me before the game when we're doing the pregame show. It's hard because sometimes I have to make a decision because basically I'm on the verge of heat stroke at any given time up on that stage. So there's times where I'm literally hiding in the shadows underneath the desk, like trying to cool my core temperature. When it's nice and cool out, I'll be gabbing with you during the commercial
break.
It's gonna be
perfect. Yeah. Outside on Saturday. I know. I gotta keep
the game which you just promoted.
Yes. Yes.
You're all distracted by the Notre Dame game, aren't you?
Well, I'm distracted because these are all games I was at. They're showing Notre Dame-Penn State games from the past.
Yeah.
And they were showing a bunch of them from when I was a student there, so I was a little distracted. That game is tonight. That's more disorienting than anything, is this college playoff football on Tuesdays and Thursdays and Wednesdays and all this stuff.
You know, I'm jealous of guys like you that went to big-time football schools, all of our Longhorns who are in attendance on the radio
the
right
chicks?
Now. No, the Notre Dame chicks and the Texas chicks, always brought up in the same conversation.
Universe, sure. What are you jealous of?
Just being in the student section for big time games like that. That's really cool. That's a unique experience. I mean, there's so many kids that make their decision on where to go to school based on. That's one of the things when people get upset about spending money on college football and everything. There is that part of it. Like, it makes money for the school, not just with the actual revenue they bring in, but man, when you create enough of a brand, you've got your enrollment just balloons because people want to be a part of that college football experience.
Yeah,
it's a cool thing.
I had about as good a 4 years football wise. I wouldn't trade the 4 years I had football wise with anybody.
Yeah.
We had Tim Brown win the Heisman my freshman year. They won national championship, and it was Catholics versus convicts my sophomore year. They made a 30 for 30 that I'm in out of that.
And that was a dynamic and a story that was way bigger than anything really can be in sports anymore.
It was huge.
Because college football, there were only so many things on television, and that was a big deal.
It was a big thing, and there were so many elements to that rivalry. My junior year, they went 12-1 and finished number two. And then my senior year, they won the – well, no, they didn't win the Orange Bowl, but Rocket Ishmael almost won the Heisman. They won, like, nine games. It was – yeah, I went there. It was a good time, man.
What are you doing – so this is relevant to the Texans.
Okay.
A lot of Texans fans have identified the tight end Tyler Warren from Penn State as a guy that they'd like to get their hooks into.
Yes.
Myself included.
Indeed.
And yet he faces the Golden Domers.
Yeah, I think they'll be okay because Penn State doesn't have that much on the outside. I think they'll be able to throw resources.
Notre Dame's secondary versus those receivers are just – yeah, you can limit – you can limit Tyler Warren. Yeah, I mean, Tyler Warren will get his touches and everything, but that's a big mismatch.
They got two really good safeties. Xavier Watts is a defensive player of the year last year, and then Shuler is a redshirt freshman who's a really good safety.
You're hoping Tyler Warren has like 150 yards receiving, and yet it's all for naught.
Yeah, like let Jordan get his 39 points. And then worry about everybody
else. Maybe we should, because I do like Tyler Warren, but maybe I hope that he has a little bit of a lackluster performance. Drive him down a little bit.
Oh, drive the value down.
Inject a little skepticism. They're like, yeah, what can this guy do in big-time games anyway?
This is not a daily fantasy take by you. This is a drive his stock price down.
Yes,
the draft.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's probably going to get a bunch of
I would
targets.
Go more than, yeah. I would go more than. Nick Caserio was on with us yesterday, and we asked him, C.J. Stroud, numbers are down this year? But they still love C.J. Stroud over there, and they still talk about how awesome C.J. And I think C.J.'s done a lot of good things this year. Is C.J. a better quarterback now than he was a year ago?
I'm sure you could talk to him about it, but C.J.'s had a really good year. So he's done a really nice job. I think his overall grasp and understanding of what we're doing offensively, and I think he made a comment in the two or three games ago, whatever it was after the game, that he's seen it better right now than he has earlier in his career. Mm-hmm. Look, this position, it's the hardest position in all of sports. Like, I'll argue that with anybody on any level. It's the hardest thing that you do. Things happen quick. You're going to have to deal with things. When you play, people have an opportunity to evaluate what do you do well, you know, what are your weaknesses, what are some of the things that maybe if we force him to do this. So part of growth and development is having an understanding of not only what you're doing offensively on your side of the ball, but having an understanding of what they're doing on the other side of the ball. So CJ's done a great job. He's had a good attitude. He's had a good approach, and he's been very open and honest and about where he is and maybe some of the things that he's had to deal with. But I've talked about this. D'Amico's talked about this. There's no other player that we'd rather have playing quarterback than CJ Stroud for this football team. And he's played a lot of good football, and you know, hopefully he can continue that moving forward into the playoffs.
I didn't want to read too much into this, except that when he said the things he's had to deal with, like on the surface, okay, just the offensive struggles in general, but I wondered if maybe that was a little bit of you know, he is actually really banged up.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Or just, you never know with any particular guy, maybe something in his personal like family life or something. I have zero clue. Everything he said about quarterbacking in general, I agree with. And part of it is, just to put it very simply, it's everything they always say about a quarterback in his second year. And I would say this about Bobby Slowick too, an offensive coordinator in his second year. Teams start to get a bead on what you like to do, what you're good at, what you can't do. And it's been really hard this year with the Texans where, I mean, it's just old school Madden, Pop Warner, whatever it might be. Man, defenses have been able to, like, without getting super technical about it, defenses wanted to take the top off the offense and were willing to concede a little bit versus the run or things underneath. And the Texans weren't able to take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they couldn't run the ball. So that's bad. If you can't run versus a 7-man front, if you can't run versus cover 2, you're an atrocious rushing offense. So they have been. Even when Joe Mixon does well, they're still, it's boom or bust. The other side of it on CJ, though, and on Bobby is, all right, there's other ways to exploit cover 2. There's other ways to exploit softer coverages. And why are they not carving people up underneath?
Yeah.
Why are there not crossers and rub routes and everything all over the place? That's where the dynamic that we don't know and we don't get insight into is exactly how is that playing out between CJ and Bobby? Are there things that CJ wants to do that Bobby's uncomfortable with or vice versa? We just don't know. And it's tough because you got to trust that when it comes to the offseason, they know how to fix that.
Yeah.
And I think CJ's gotten a lot better at some of the more boring elements of the game. Just taking the checkdowns, taking the easy money, all the cliches.
He's doing that a lot more.
Taking
this
a profit.
Year. Yep.
That's part of the maturation of a quarterback, and it's hard to do when you're wired like a guy who's CJ, like CJ, who wants to push the ball downfield.
What's your confidence level in CJ having a good game on Saturday?
Not great, because like everything we just talked about, whenever we've seen the Texans this year go against teams that are solid run defenses, mm-hmm. they very rarely run the ball very effectively at all. And a lot of things that Bobby's trying to do to set up the pass, it's all for naught, because like defenses aren't biting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they like the Titans in that first game, like, all right, yeah, we'll see. No, we'll get to the run eventually.
Yeah.
We're just going to have our linebacker sit back here at 7 yards.
Sat in the cutback lanes.
Yeah, and they'll just kind of, we'll just wait. You know, we can take care of the run. Don't worry about that. And it's hard to get anything to operate that way. I'm not overly pessimistic about the Texans' prospects of winning. I think I have a realistic, if I look at it as objectively as possible, this is like any NFL game where, yeah, the Chargers are a better team, but it's any given Saturday in the NFL.
Sure.
The Texans defensively can do some really do some things to make life really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can take the ball away, yes, they've got a swinging chance in this game, but it's got to come with like a +2 turnover margin.
+2 turnover margin.
They're very capable of doing it, but that's what it's got to include in my mind.
Yep. Moves along the offensive line. Tytus Howard moving to left guard has been the biggest one. We asked Nick Caserio yesterday, how's that gone so far, Tytus to left guard?
Tytus has done a really nice job since we kind of moved him over. Some of it was by need. You know, we lost a number of players, injury, and then it's like, what are our best options there? And I think part of the calculus of the discussion was, if we move Tytus over, might be an opportunity for us to put Blake over there at right tackle and to get him some snaps, and Blake's gone in there and done a commendable job. But give Tytus a lot of credit for being a good teammate, being kind of selfless and kind of handling it as professionally as he has. It's not easy. Titus is a good football player. I think he's shown through the years that he has position versatility. And when you have position versatility across the offensive line, it just gives you a lot more flexibility. So he's gone in there really without any reps because he practiced essentially from spring to training camp and during the regular season. He was exclusively at right tackle. And then we had a, it's not as easy as it might look on paper, but a lot of credit to Titus and the approach that he's taken. Right now, we feel that's the best thing for the football team. And then with Juice coming back last week, putting him over there at right guard because Shaq wasn't available. So whoever the best five are, whatever we feel that gives us the best chance to win that week, then we're going to go ahead and do that. Some of it's based on player availability as well. So we'll take it case by case, week by week. But, you know, Titus has done a nice job kind of making that move.
Titus at left guard, if he were a full-time left guard, I'd be really excited about that,
yeah,
honestly.
I'm rooting for this going into next season.
But it's also, it's a little bit like people that wanted Tony Romo to be a coach. The first prerequisite to being a coach in the NFL is that you got to really want to be a coach.
Yeah.
Like any coach listening right now knows that, like, no matter how much money you're making, you got to live that life to be good at it. Now, Romo's never struck me as a guy that wants to be a coach or work those kinds of hours or anything. No. Like on any level. You want to be a good high school coach? You got to go coach. You got to teach history all day and then work a full-time job as a high school
coach.
Dude,
he's gotten better again this year, but the last 3 years, he's barely felt like he's wanted to be an announcer.
Tony Romo, yeah. I was thinking Titus Howard. Yeah. So Titus, I feel like with Titus, this is what I hope for him in the future is, and maybe this would pay dividends during the playoffs. Like, if he could really, like, embrace that, like, oh, wait a second. Like, I could actually be a really, really good guard.
Yeah.
I could be, I'm way more, he's a passable athlete as an offensive tackle.
You need
tackle.
To give him a pep talk
he
for this.
He could be really good as a guard. Now, and the other thing is with Laremy Tunsil, and where I've tried to be, well, you and I were talking during the break, where you feel like I've been pretty measured about Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah.
Where a lot of people just flat out, you know, want to cut him, this, all that.
Trade him, fire
like,
him,
I 100% yeah. acknowledge that Laremy Tunsil is a very, very good pass protector. With Laremy, it's always been frustrating for me because I feel like athletically, he's got the potential to be much more. I think midway through the season or so is whenever he started taking responsibility for his penalties. Mm-hmm. He also looked like he showed he's committed to trying to run block. The problem is, all right, it's a big change. It's a big change for a guy at his age to all of a sudden
care.
Become a blue collar. Like, yeah, like I'm going to be the complete package.
Right.
But I do think he's trying. And it reminds me of Roger Dorn in Major League.
Yes.
And I think maybe I'm getting too old because I don't think this resonates as much as it should.
I know what you're talking
Roger
about.
Roger Dorn in Major League was this prima donna, third baseman.
Third baseman.
But he didn't like, he was thinking about his life after football and he wanted to be a movie star and he wouldn't, you know, he wouldn't take hard ground balls and everything. But when they make the switch, he was willing to do all those
things.
Yeah,
man.
You know?
And I think, icing down after games.
And and I think Laremy is trying to make that transition. So the thought of Laremy and Titus at left tackle and left guard, I think that could be really good in the future.
I do too.
If Laremy Tunsil stays committed to the way he's trying to operate now.
NFL announced team rankings on awful announcing. How did our friend Ross Tucker stack up?
Ooh.
This is a vote of about 50,000 people. How did our friend Ross Tucker and others, who's the best announced team in the NFL? I think this is really, the number one team on here is really interesting. Very interesting considering the drama surrounding the announcers at this network. We'll talk about that coming up next.